Oh, hey, testing, is this thing on? Hey, it's Will. I'm coming to you live from the old Good for an Action Movie editing studio here in Columbus, Ohio. Look, folks, no other way to put it, it has been a long time since we released an episode. And not to say we weren't recording them, we recorded these about 4 months ago, but Max and I have not managed to get them edited. Wish I could say that I was busy, but I wasn't, just didn't do it. So I apologize for that. But hey, it's 2019, and one of my resolutions was to get these two episodes published. We got a couple of them coming your way, some great movies. Hopefully we'll release some more stuff in 2019, but if there's one thing we've learned in the history of GFAM's sporadic publication, we should never make promises about when and where the episodes in the future will be posted, or even what movies we're going to talk about. So enjoy these episodes, and hopefully there'll be more coming your way soon.
Get away from her, you bitch!
Great kid! Don't get cocky!
That still only counts as one!
Okay, you people sit tight, hold the fort, and keep the home fires burning. If we're not back by dawn, call the president.
Groovy.
Hello, and welcome to Good for an Action Movie. I'm one of your hosts, Max Steele.
I'm this other one of your hosts, Will Thornton.
And today we're going to be talking about Hellboy 2, The Golden Army. So after last recording session where we recorded both of our podcasts about Baywatch and Mission Impossible, I had a little bit of a realization in talking about Baywatch that I absolutely hated talking about really bad movies. And Will, I don't know if you had any concurrent thoughts to that.
I kind of liked it, but... I'm down for whatever.
And we were thinking about the kind of the direction of the podcast and something that we want to do kind of because of our personal schedules and also because we can talk more about more pointed things, things that we're really passionate about. We want to touch on a lot of movies that either we don't think get enough recognition or movies that we think can be thought about in new ways. We've done episodes like that before, like John Wick or Kong Skull Island. And I think that's really what we're going to be doing, kind of going into the future here, or at least for a little bit. But if you really liked watching or us talking about a bad movie, please let us know. And we'll try to do new releases as well if there's anything really big coming up.
Yeah, definitely. We want to talk about things that, as Max said, either one of us or both of us are like passionate about. And yeah, hey, if we ever get any feedback, we'll be sure to follow it.
Absolutely. Make sure those tweets are coming at us at GFAMPod. But like I said, today we're going to be talking about probably one of my favorite action movies, which is why I suggested it to Will, who you haven't seen it before, right?
I have not. I had not seen either of the Hellboy Guillermo del Toro movies. And I did not watch the first one in preparation for this one. I just watched this one. Max said I'd probably be fine. And I was so confused. he's a hell boy? No, I was fine. I have a comment about that, but I will save it for later. Max, I'll let you sort of intro the movie.
Absolutely. So this movie was made in 2008. Again, this was Hellboy 2. Colin, the Golden Army. And when it came out, when I was in like seventh grade, I didn't really hear too much about it except for like one friend who really, really liked Hellboy. So when I actually got to see this in probably the middle of high school when it was on Netflix kind of during its first run, I was really, really surprised by it. And I really enjoy this movie. So that's why I think it's not necessarily a hidden gem because I know everybody who... At least in my experience, everyone who has watched this really enjoys it, and I've seen a lot of positive things about it, but it's not kind of heralded as much as I think that it can be. So do you have any immediate things, since this is your first time seeing this movie?
Yeah. One thing I wanted to say quickly, just to touch on the kind of idea of, like, this isn't a hidden gem. I think we should maybe, in case people are confused, like, we're not going to be, like, focusing on, like, cult movies that, like, no one has seen. It's right. Just, like... Maybe we're going to do something more like Hellboy 2 instead of like Iron Man 2. Like just a little less than like the giant studio blockbusters that everyone has seen. Which honestly is kind of what we've been doing already. But yeah, just so like in case we're ever like talking about a movie and people are like, and you're thinking like, wait, everyone has heard of that movie. Yeah, we know. It's just like, they're probably not as well known as some other movies. But going back to my thoughts on Hellboy 2. So I'm not sure why I never had seen the movies. Honestly, I didn't really get that into watching Guillermo del Toro movies until like pretty recently. Like I saw Pan's Labyrinth a few years ago, and we can maybe talk more about how Pan's Labyrinth is related to this movie a lot. I'm spoiling my eventual thoughts on this movie. But in short, I really liked it a lot. I was taken away to a magical world of really inventive creatures, and the effects are great. And so many of the shots are just like gorgeous. The battles, the fight scenes are so well choreographed.
The color palette is really interesting.
Exquisite color palette.
Well, yes. I mean, that's just something that I think about when I think about the movie. It's like, it's very unique in terms of like the actual, I don't know, like the actual colors of the movie. Right. I don't see a lot in other movies. It's a very blue movie and a very gold movie.
Is it gold?
It's a golden movie. But yeah, to introduce kind of like the scope of the movie. So like I said to Will, I don't think you really have to see the first Hellboy movie. Honestly, I don't really think it's that great. But I saw it a long time ago. So maybe revisiting either for the podcast or personally might be in the cards for me. But essentially is that Hellboy was essentially a demon summoned to the world by Nazi occultists in 1943, I believe. And this is all explained in the first panel of the second movie. So they catch you up to speed if you haven't seen the first movie. And he was basically adopted by John Hurt, I forget what his character's name is, and is now in service to the government in the Paranormal Bureau of Investigation, I believe is what the department is called, headed by one Jeffrey Tambor, which I think is really funny.
Right, right. He burst right out of John Hurt's chest. I thought that was pretty shocking.
Yes, yes, yes. So the scope of the movie essentially is after you're kind of introduced to the idea of Hellboy, you're introduced to this idea that there are elves in this world, or at least there was a long time ago, and they were in contest with humans, and so they built a golden army that was supposed to, you know, describing it does not really do it justice.
It's sort of it's a very like archetypal story kind of like, especially in like fantasy books or movies where it's like there was this giant war in the past and a sort of like ultra weapon was created. It reminded me a lot of like the opening scenes/ the backstory to Lord of the Rings, where it's like there was this big war in the past. This like ultimate weapon was created. That weapon is no longer being used, but like someone is trying to use it again. So they have to then figure out what to do. And in that ways, it has a lot of parallels to like the One Ring.
Yeah, basically. That's a really good point. And it's done in a really cool way because we get to see what we don't get to see in the first movie, which is Hellboy as a teenager with his basically adopted father, John Hurt, during the Christmas season, which is really cool, after he's watching Howdy Doody, which, again, is really cool. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. And John Hurt's character reads it to Hellboy as a bedtime story, essentially laying the groundwork for the Chekhov's gun to eventually come back, obviously, later. And so there's going to be this prince who's an elven prince who has decided to use the Golden Army again for to reclaim the land that was lost by his ancestors. And essentially, the plot ensues.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's really, I mean, it's a, like, as far as action movies goes, as far as action movie goes, this is not a movie entirely reliant upon the plot, even though I think it's solid. But we did want to give a quick overview before we kind of dove into what is really special about this movie.
Yeah, I do think the story is really solid. I mean, it's it at least has a well-established villain, and a lot of the side characters have sort of their own arc that they're going through. from Abe Sapien, the very Shape of Water looking character.
Oh yeah, it's played by the same guy, Doug
right,
Jones.
Right, Doug Jones. Yeah, he's the man. So plays the Fawn in Pan's Labyrinth, and he also plays the guy with the eyes in his hands. Whatever he does, all you know, Guillermo del Toro's monsters. At least all the tall, gangly ones.
Yeah, essentially.
That's right, Doug Jones. You got a weird, tall, gangly body.
And we love it, Doug.
And we love you, Doug. Please come on the podcast.
Oh, how epic would that be for our first guest?
Wow, to be Doug Jones.
There's a lot to talk about with this movie.
There is. I think that I definitely have a lot of thoughts.
And kind of spurring off from the plot, like I said, the plot's not really what excites me about this movie, is that there are so many cool characters in this movie. Starting first off with Ron Perlman's Hellboy. I think he does such a good job of being such a normal, like, guy who's also happens to be a demon. I don't think an actual demon trying to be a human could actually do as good a job as Ron Perlman does doing that.
Yeah, I thought he was great. It's such a sort of human performance. The only thing that basically makes him remarkable is the, you know, the fact that he's a demon.
Yeah,
that
he's looks got like horns a demon.
But as far as just like what he does day to day, it's just, I mean, he's literally just playing like, basically like a somewhat sort of messy guy who, like, you know, needs to get his life in order, but like does have a good heart and all these things. And yeah, I thought he's very funny, and he's a really lovable hero.
And you get that right from the beginning. One of my favorite things about the movie is that on the opening title card, where it explains the entire backstory to Hellboy, like it's this demon summoned from another world. He was brought to the world by Nazi occultists. And then the final thing that's on that card is that it says he loves candy and TV,
yeah.
Which I think really sums up his character perfectly. And he has got some other things that he really loves as well. He loves cats, right, which I think is such a funny thing.
Max, let's just address the obvious thing here. You really relate to Hellboy.
I am Hellboy. So. Except for the fact that he loves Tecate, and I do not like Tecate.
Also, you know, look, people might not know this, and it might turn certain people off from the podcast, but Max was summoned by Nazi occultists back
in 1983.
Wow. I did not know.
It was in Brazil.
Argentina, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the boys from Brazil.
Can we please talk about, I know Hellboy's fun, but can we please talk about Johann Kraus?
Oh, yeah. So one of the great relationships in the movie, this is another thing that this movie does really well, is relationships, is that Hellboy is very laissez-faire and really likes to do things his own way. And one of the things that he's very adamant about early in the movie is being known to the public, which is a big no-no by Jeffrey Tambor, who is the head of the paranormal investigation unit that they're a part of. And after Hellboy does a bunch of stuff to mess with that, they bring in a by-the-book, essentially like a by-the-books cop.
Yeah, it's archetype. I mean, it's a plot cliche we've seen like a million times of like they're bringing in the higher-up who is incredibly strict and he plays by the rules and like, listen up here, Hellboy, you're not going to be able to get away with that stuff anymore. But
he's an ethereal German machine.
I think he is a ghost, right?
Yeah,
he's a ghost in the machine.
Yes.
Yeah. He's a ghost in the
shell.
He's
a deus ex machina.
Yeah. He's a ghost that has embodied a clothes, basically, but it's such a cool costume.
Mm-hmm. And this is how Seth MacFarlane gets introduced to the to the Hellboy universe.
And he talks like this.
Yeah,
as my Stewie impression.
There are different points in the movie where he sounds exactly like Stewie.
Really? See, yeah. I'm not as well versed in Family Guy, so I didn't notice.
But yeah,
I actually didn't know it was Seth MacFarlane until after the movie.
Yeah, I didn't know until after the first time I watched it, and now this time knowing that it was him, I could kind of be like, oh, I can tell really like different notes of his character.
But so. I think going back to what you were saying about relationships in this movie, I actually think that this is something that the Marvel movies do really well. And I think that arguably maybe Hellboy 2 is like a really, I mean, this came out the same year as Iron Man or a year before,
yeah. I think.
But one thing that the Marvel movies do, I think, very well is they portray relationships between characters with drastically different personalities that still like each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like Tony Stark and Steve Rogers are very different. And even though there is a movie about the Civil War between them, for the most part, in most of the movies, they still get along and respect each other. Bruce Banner is very different. Natasha is very different. You know, Thor is very different. These characters all have opposite personalities, but they work together. And I think that Hellboy does the exact same thing, where Hellboy and Johann Krauss and Abe Sapien and Selma Blair, what is her name?
I don't know her character.
Liz?
Liz, it's just right, Liz. Yeah.
They all argue, and they have clearly, and Jeffrey Tambor, like they have very opposing points of view and how they relate to each other, but they do all still work together, and they want the same thing, so they team up, and the dialogue that they have together is very fun because you get to see the different characters and how they all react together.
And all the relationships, I think, are unique too. I think a lot of, kind of go back to your example of the MCU, I think a lot of the MCU's relationships can be viewed as like very similar between different characters. But in this one movie, I think every single relationship between people is very unique. Like Abe Sapien and Hellboy, they just call him Red in the movie, which I think is a good move too. A very MCU move, not to call them by their character name in the movie too. Have a very like best friends relationship where they talk to each other about their feelings and other things. And he's got Liz's girlfriend who they fight and have different quarrels with. They're learning how to live together after they got together in the first movie. Jeffrey Tambor, who's trying to keep everyone together. Johann Krauss, who's trying to keep it by the book. A lot of really cool relationships in this movie. And it nothing ever gets really old in those relationships, too. This is a very fast-paced movie.
Yeah, and like everything is paid off. Like the Hellboy and Johann Krauss have a big confrontation and then reconcile, and Abe and Hellboy have a bonding moment, and Hellboy and Selma Blair, like, their relationship is well-paced and has beats throughout the story. And even, like, Johann Krauss and Abe Sapien and Selma Blair, like, they have relationships, too. They're not as at the forefront. The movie's called Hellboy, but they are still there. Shall we move on to the action? Or maybe a better way to talk about this would maybe be just like the visuals of this movie. I definitely want to spend time on that.
Yeah. One thing I did want to talk about before we kind of got to more like action-y visual communication in the movie cinematography, how things are communicated, was just a lot of the things I really like about this movie. I think the action is really good and all that. But this movie has just so much, honestly. If you're looking for a fun movie, this is a really good movie to watch. You ever think about a movie that is not too serious but will make you think? There are a lot of very interesting themes in this movie, kind of revolving around being a unique person, trying to fit in, being the last of one's kind. And those are kind of discussed, and you might be like, well, how did this get brought up in a comic book movie? It does it really well, too, and it doesn't hit you over the head with it. And constantly is thinking about that. And it has possibly my favorite scene in an action movie of all time, which is Red and Abe Sapien getting drunk and listening to Can't Smile Without You. I cannot stress this enough that when I watch movies alone, I do not usually like emote when I watch them. I had the stupidest grin on my face during that scene, and it is so much fun every time that I've watched it.
Yeah, that scene was great. I was going to specifically mention that one as well. I just had a big smile on my face too. It was like, oh, I want to rewind and just watch that scene again, just them singing that. And then they pay it off at the end by playing that song in the credits so you get it again, which is, and then it just like makes you smile again. Yeah.
I can't smile
without that scene.
Hey. And I think the reason for this is that they really let these superhero characters be, well, superheroes kind of in quotes because they're paranormal beings, but for the sake of this movie, that it's a superhero movie, is that they just let these supernatural beings, these creatures in quote, just be humans, which I don't think they usually let superheroes be, except in like rare exceptions, right, in the MCU or other movies. So just seeing like Red have a shower beer at one point during the movie and seeing them sing together and seeing just the way that they, Abe Sapien like falls in love with someone, mm-hmm, which is a very cute, like plot line as well. It's just so much fun to watch. I can't stress how fun this movie is.
Yeah.
You can talk about the action now if you want.
I wanted to just like, it should be like no surprise. It's a Guillermo del Toro movie. And I think it's, if there's one thing the movie is very well known for, is that it's like visual flair. But there are just so many shots in this movie that are gorgeous. And the creature design and the makeup and some of the practical effects and just the whole way the action sequences are shot. I mean, this is a movie, and there are other movies like this, but this is a movie I think you would genuinely and really enjoy watching it without the sound, because it just, every shot is packed with so much, like the scene when he kills the like big plant elemental thing, and then the city
corner, the forest starts, god,
transforming into a forest, and it's just so beautifully done. And then the troll market is very like cantina, you know, like, but at the same time is just full of all these inventive characters, and the big demon guy at the end, which is like straight out of Pan's Labyrinth. You know what I'm talking about?
The
Angel of Death. Yeah, there you go.
I'm very familiar with the cast list.
Very familiar with the Angel of Death.
I don't know if you know this, but I've seen this movie twice.
The Angel of Death also appears in my other favorite movie, Click. That's true. Christopher Walken does play the Angel of Death.
Oh, is that a spoiler?
It's a spoiler, but pretty weird.
Oh, but I think that if someone told you, yeah, Christopher Walken plays the Angel of Death, you'd be like, that sounds right.
But let me say that sentence again. Christopher Walken plays the Angel of Death in Adam Sandler's Click.
That makes it even weirder, yeah, and very Christopher Walken-y. You are correct, though. Like, that is a really, really good way to put like how the visuals work in this movie and how everything is just really, really cool in terms of design. This movie, for all intents and purposes, just watching it for a second time, is just a fantasy movie.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of things that I've heard from other movies, and I think that are really affirming, especially like in the MCU, is that superhero movies are really good when they're a superhero movie, but also another type of movie, like Winter Soldier is like this paranoid thriller. I can't think of any other examples off the top of my head, but like this movie is a superhero movie, but also just like a high fantasy movie set in New York City.
Yeah.
And so you get all these like elven characters. There's a troll, like you said, the troll market. There is the orc that built the golden army for the elves. There's a lot of that stuff kind of behind this guise of a superhero movie. And it's really interesting to see this world that Del Toro has constructed. And for a very long time, Hellboy and Hellboy 2 were the only Guillermo del Toro movies that I had actually seen. I've still never seen Pan's Labyrinth.
Ooh.
I know, that's a very big gap in my movie watching career. And then I have seen Shape of Water, because my dude, Abe Sapien, is the star of Shape of Water, and I believe won an Oscar for it. I believe he gets half of Guillermo's, right?
I was going to say, I don't think Doug Jones won Best Supporting Actor.
Oh, no, he won Best Actor.
It is like unabashedly a fantasy movie. And this is the point I was kind of hinting at earlier. But as I said, I had never seen Hellboy. And I just was like, Max basically told me I could probably just jump right into this. And you totally can. But I felt much... Here's my hot take, basically. I think the Hellboy 2, more like Pan's Labyrinth 2.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my theory. I've never seen Hellboy 2004, but Guillermo's movies were released. Hellboy, Pan's Labyrinth, Hellboy 2.
Mm.
Pan's Labyrinth came out in the middle. And
I did not know that.
If you've seen Pan's Labyrinth, which if you haven't, you should absolutely watch it. It's a phenomenal movie.
I'll get on it.
This movie takes a ton of stuff from Pan's Labyrinth. It feels very much like the sort of fantasy world, like underneath the real world, behind the scenes of this movie, is basically the world from Pan's Labyrinth. And from the little bit of internet research I did, it seems like the whole idea of like there being a war between the men and the elves and all this stuff wasn't really present in the original Hellboy.
It's definitely not in there as well. Like I said, I have not seen it, but like Hellboy 1, from what I remember, it's mostly about like him just being a demon and coming to grips with that.
Yeah, yeah.
And stuff like that.
I mean, I would still watch it. I think, Del Toro is a great filmmaker.
I remember liking it, but I don't remember like loving it like I did the first time I watched Hellboy 2.
Yeah.
And me going to school and telling my friends, like, you gotta watch Hellboy 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's the reaction that I had to it. And none of my friends except one, who is the one from middle school who had seen it at the time and recommended it to me, and then I never saw it.
And he was like, I know, I saw it back then.
I know. He actually saw it in theaters. He was really excited about it. I just really, really like this movie. It's so much fun to watch. If you've never watched it before, it's a really good watch. It's not long at all. Mm-hmm. I think it's just 2 hours.
It's 2 hours, I think.
It's 2 hours, and it moves very fast very smart ways. So definitely worth the time investment. In terms of some more action that have been alluding to, there are a lot of cool, I think, homages to other kind of action sequences. One thing that I think about is that there is an entire action sequence kind of going back to battling a forest elemental or forest god, where Red is carrying a baby. Mm-hmm. For the majority of the fight, which kind of calls back to John Woo's Hard Boiled, that is an insane scene. It does not compare to the insaneness of and the insanity of that particular scene, but it's a really cool kind of plot point or a really cool kind of plot device within that scene. And there's a lot of other really cool like fights as well.
Let me say this though: if you're a person that doesn't like the idea of little tiny monsters eating your teeth.
Ooh,
maybe don't watch this movie.
This movie scared me.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is
it's kind of a horror movie.
It's a PG-13 movie, but there are legitimately some shocking shots of this movie that are very disturbing.
Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, what Will's talking about is that early in the movie, kind of before you get in the main swing of things, there's this kind of... the paranormal team is brought in to kind of hunt down these very tiny creatures that are called tooth fairies.
Yep.
That swarm. There are like thousands of them. They swarm and eat every part of a human body so that they can harvest the teeth. And the visuals associated with that are pretty gory.
Yeah, pretty gross. But... Right. Well, we're running a little long here. Should we move on to ratings and recs unless you have any closing thoughts?
Yeah, maybe some quick closing thoughts. There are just a lot of things to say about this movie, and I don't think I can talk about it enough just from just how much I enjoy it. And I even said it just kind of like without even thinking about it, that I said this is one of my favorite movies. And I think that it is, honestly, because of how much I enjoy watching it, just in terms of like sheer watchability and just like in terms of how much fun it is. Some other really good things is that it is so many different types of movie. Like I said, it's a fantasy movie. It's a buddy cop movie because that's essentially what Red and Johann Strauss's relationship is. It's kind of a romantic comedy between Red and Liz. There's a lot. And also Abe Sapien and the lady elf.
Princess Nuala.
Nuala. She's really cool as well. I like her character a lot, too. I also like the king elf who...
Shot of him turning into wood. Ooh, is so cool. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. A lot of really cool stuff there. Not even touching all the really cool stuff about that. It's just so many different types of movie. And it also does like a really cool kind of prototype to a lot of things we're seeing in the MCU now, where the protagonist is like very justified in what he's doing. And you can kind of understand him what is the prince's name? Do you have any idea?
Princess Nuada.
So it's Prince Nuada, Princess Nuala?
I think.
Something like that.
It's definitely Prince Nuada.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's very good at it as well. I like his character. I think he's a very good antagonist.
I like the guy with the big ball on a chain that comes out of his arm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what was his name? He's just the minion to him.
Yeah.
And that's a really cool fight scene, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another really cool thing that I wanted to talk about, too, because I actually read about this, is that there is an article, kind of going back to what you said about all the cool creature design in the movie. There's an article, I cannot remember where you can find it, but it's called Show the Monster, and it's by Guillermo del Toro. I think it might have been an interview with him as well, but it shows like his differences in philosophy towards monster movies as compared to like Jaws or Cloverfield on the big blockbusters that we're familiar with. In those movies, typically like monsters are hidden to create suspense so that when it's actually revealed, it's really kind of crazy. And in this movie and Pan's Labyrinth and Hellboy and all the movies that he's had, he is never shy about showing the audience what the monsters look like. And you get a really different and cool effect because of that, which I think is a very interesting part about this movie too.
Yeah, I remember reading a Reddit discussion or something online like years ago about like, is there any movie that the build up to the monster is like paid off? And the one that basically everyone can agree on is that
Jaws.
The Pale Man from Pan's Labyrinth, which is one of the creepiest things I've ever seen.
Is he?
Yeah, yeah. Good radio here. Max put his hands over his eyes.
I have seen that part.
Yeah.
It is very creepy.
It is very creepy.
He's got eyes in his hands.
He's got eyes in his hands. But, shout out. Show the Monster.
Another thing, real quick thing, just because I have so many things to say about this movie, is that this is the second time that I've seen this movie. So I watched it, like, in the middle of high school, and then this is probably, like, 6 or 7 years later. So I've only seen it twice. But I remembered so much about this movie, which I never do. Like, usually when I see a movie for the second time, even if I liked it the first time, I'm surprised about things that I forgot about this. I remembered so many like specific things about this movie and shots, which I never really thought of, never really like had that in a second viewing before. Like, I even remembered like the entire last scene and everything like that. And I think that really speaks to like how interesting it is and how like memorable the movie is as well. Just for that experience, because that was so cool watching it the second time.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Like, I mean, I've seen it once and it was like about a week ago or less than a week ago. But I would definitely compare it to something. I think it's just something with a lot of visual flair where like, I remember the second time I saw Fury Road, which was like maybe 2 months after I saw it the first time. And I was like, man, I remembered every single shot of that movie. Like, it was still just as enjoyable, but I remembered it all because everything was just so, each little scene was so enjoyable. Mm-hmm. But what do you think? Ratings?
I think we go right into ratings and recs. But again, I cannot recommend this movie or rate it any more highly. So do you want to go first or would you like?
Sure. I can do my rating.
Some ratings.
Out of 4 stars, I think I'd give this movie 3.5 stars. I don't think I would get 4 stars, but it's a very good movie. Max is singing its praises. I am joining the chorus.
My favorite Walt Whitman poem is I sing Hellboy 2.
I contain multitudes of tooth fairies.
I hear the sapien swish, and I don't know, I'm trying to do my best Walt Whitman.
When I heard the learned ghost in a machine, I'm butchering
our this Whitman is not great.
Yeah, yeah.
Leaves of Johann Strauss.
Yes, yes.
Leaves of Strauss.
Well, this is a very weird tangent, but give 3.5 stars. It's a wonderful movie. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's on Netflix. You will be continually impressed and surprised and just have a great time watching it. And as far as an action movie goes, I will give this movie, in terms of action, 8 out of 10 teeth.
Appropriate because of your favorite little characters in that movie. I really like this movie. If I was going to be honest, I'd probably give it exactly the same ratings as Will. But for the sake of podcasting, I'm just going to go out here and say it. I think this is a 4-star movie. Wow.
That's our first one, I think.
I know. I'm just going to give it 4 stars. I think this movie is so good, and I've been talking about it for so long, and just how much I enjoy it. Is it a perfect movie? I don't think it's a perfect movie, but it you can really get over a lot of the imperfections that I don't even really notice that are there upon like thinking about it, because it's so fast paced and the relationships are so strong and the plot is solid and it's anchored there. The antagonist is good. Mm-hmm. The action is good. The visuals are good. It's so imaginative. It's this really cool blend of superhero and fantasy. So I'm just going to go out on a limb and give it a 4 stars. And then in terms of action, again, I'd probably give it 8 out of 10, but for the sake of podcasting, 8.5 out of 10 golden army, like what's like a gear thing?
A gear.
Like a big gear. I don't know if there's a fancy term.
8.5 big gears.
Big gears. There's some big gears in this movie.
Big, a lot of, it's, if you like, hey, if you're a gearhead out there,
yeah,
maybe check out this movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'll give it 8.5 out of 10 Tecate Lights. 8.5 out of 10 first, shower beers.
First 4-star review on the podcast. You heard it here first, folks. Max does like Hellboy 2 The Golden Army more than he liked Small Soldiers.
Wow, I'm going to have to go back and edit Small Soldiers.
All right, let's move on to recommendations. Honestly, haven't seen too many movies recently. Been busy at work and stuff. But if I had to recommend something, boo work. If I had to recommend something that I've seen recently, you know what? I'll play it safe here, and I will just say, if you haven't seen Pan's Labyrinth, and if your name is Max Steele, you should watch Pan's Labyrinth.
Both of those things are true.
Pan's Labyrinth is my rec. It's a great movie. It's phenomenal.
I've heard good things. My recommendation, I'm almost done with this book, but I really, really like it. It is called The Known World by Edward P. Jones. This is a novel written in 2004 that won the Pulitzer Prize for Literature. It is about black slave owners in antebellum American South. It is fascinating. It is very interesting, and it's basically a work of historical fiction. It's based in fact and documents that Edward P. Jones found, and he is a very interesting man as well. So that is what I'm going to recommend. So anything else you'd like to share, Will?
You know what? No. That is all I have. Nice to watch a good movie.
Yeah, it's good to be back in good. It's good to be.
You know why.